Welcome back, folks. This is Shane. I'm back with Dr. Rick.
Oh, man. We've been around the world a few times since
yeah.
then.
You've yeah. been jet-setting around everywhere.
I have been. Well, yeah, we were living in London for 9 weeks from sort of late August to late October. So it's yeah. been bonkers, man. But it's good to be home.
Yeah. First thing I have to ask about your travels. First thing, always, what are the guitar shops like?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. Like, there's some amazing stuff. But it made me realise we actually aren't on such a bad deal here, yeah. to tell you the truth. Yeah, just stuff was extortionately expensive in places. So, yeah, I was happy to be home and, yeah, see our stuff here.
So you went to, like, England and then you went to
yeah,
Canada,
so,
right?
Yeah, we did a side yeah. trip to Canada and Scotland and down to Portugal for a few days. Because once you're in that neck of the woods, it's actually not that far to travel and
yeah.
actually surprisingly cheap. Guitars are expensive, the airfares are cheap. Yeah. If you don't mind flying on, it's not the dodgy airlines, but
yeah,
it was cool.
Did you pick up anything on the travels?
Well, I think as Sue told all her friends, Rick was here for 2 days and he bought a guitar. And look, I did. I bought a guitar just to keep my hand in, folks. As you know, you don't play for 2 weeks and these go all soft and buttery and whatnot. So I just bought a secondhand Cherry Red 335 copy.
Yeah, great.
And it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it, having it and playing it. So, yeah, it's given me a bit of gas.
So I copied you by the sounds of that. I just got my Epiphone the other day as of filming this. And, yeah, we're going down the 335 rabbit hole a little bit.
And I
can tell you're sort of keen to get back into one.
I am. Yeah, certainly. Well, I think those videos you sent me with Guy King and our saviour, Chris Kane, it just sort of turns your ear to that. I know, you know, guys like Larry Carton, Robin Ford, that's what they played on. But, I guess as your ears mature and change and you realise it's not all about a million notes, it's all about the ones you choose and mm-hmm. how you squeeze them. Yeah, the 335, yeah, it's a thing. It's only taken me 70 years to realise that.
Yeah, and there's a clear difference between, like, the right 335 tone for blues and struggling with, like, dark pickups or, I've struggled with 335. I've always loved 335s. My Epiphone was my best. The Tokai was probably the best all-rounder.
Yeah.
The Gibson I had always sounded a little bit too dark, but when you find the right pickup combo, it's great. Yeah. What were the pickups like on the one you got?
They were really good. So I think they were, the brand was Entwistle, which I thought, is that the guy from The Who? But turns out it's a guy called Alan Entwistle in England.
Oh, cool.
And they're wound like a PAF. You know, it's
taken
us forever to work out that all humbuckers aren't equal.
Mm-hmm.
Like a really good humbucker to me just sounds like a telly with a little bit more oomph, but still got that chirpy top. And so I really loved it. And the crazy thing was to buy a case to get it home safely was going to cost the equivalent of about $600 Australian for a proper case. You don't want to put anything dodgy in the hole because they'll smash it.
Yeah.
So I was heartbroken to have to sell it before we left. If I could have got it home safely, 100% would have.
Yeah.
So, that's an unfinished story.
I'm going to do a new guitar day for Rick coming up pretty soon, by the looks of it. We'll go down, we'll make some noise, we'll see if we can...
Well...
You know, the idea was, I think I said to you before I went away on the last trip that maybe we'll go down to the other shop that had the Tokais.
Yes.
They've gone up quite a lot. Around $3,500 Australian.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I saw that and I thought, well, it would have to be something pretty amazing.
Yeah.
What I bought this guitar for was it was 200 British pounds. That's about $400 Australian.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah, that's great.
It was the first guitar I've ever had that had fret sprout. That's not something we get down here.
Yeah, the weather's different, huh?
Yeah. But I'm sliding around and thinking, struth, you know, you can almost cut your finger. And so I just went to the corner store, bought some sandpaper and just sort of rounded it off a bit.
Yeah.
But, everything else about that guitar, I would have bought it back here, gigged it. It was great. And the funny story is I listed it on London Marketplace to sell.
Yeah.
And the guy knew me from the channel.
Nice.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
He's a guy who's from the Solomon Islands.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Rick. He's studying in London from the Solomon Islands, loves his blues.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a country guy too. He plays pedal steel. Anyway, saw the ad, saw that it was My Ugly Mug, and it was kind of meant to be. It was,
yeah, great.
It was kind of cosmically cool, blew my mind.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, he bought it, and I know where it is. Mm. So, it was cool.
Yeah. Rick always gets noticed anytime we're anywhere. We were in Germany in the middle of nowhere at Pro Tools,
it was called, in Munich.
Yeah. And someone's like, are you Dr. Rick?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah,
people, he must have a particular look.
I think so. It's like once you've seen Freddy Krueger, like you'll never mistake him again. It's like that because the same happened to me in this really cool, like it's a cool guitar shop.
Yeah.
Like way cooler than I belong in. And I'm just sort of drooling over all these beautiful guitars, and this bloke just bails me up, Dr. Rick. And he's a fellow YouTuber and guitar photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't hide anywhere.
I got to ask you too, what was Anderton's like when you went
there? Oh, yeah. So, because that's quite a trip. It's like a 45-minute trip out of London on the train. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just sort of walking along the streets, and all of a sudden, bang, there it is. And you know, because we've been watching them for years.
Yeah.
So to go there, it was kind of surreal, but, and sorry, Lee, it's got this vibe of a typical sort of guitar shop with sort of entry-level stuff, and then there's a big high-end room out the back. Look, it was great to be there, but, I guess when you see stuff just through a video, for some reason, I think, it's going to be huge and massive. it's still great, but it was still good to get there. But I guess didn't blow my mind like I thought it was going to.
Yeah, right. You never can tell with stuff. It either exceeds your expectations or it looks small because of the hype around their channel and all that sort of stuff. Exactly. You expect it to be bigger than what we're used to. Was it kind of like the size of Sky Music or not quite?
Yeah, but not the sort of scale.
Yeah,
it just seems sort of a bit, perhaps the high ceilings of Sky give it that sense of space. But having said that, that place you went to in America with the separate performing area.
Oh, yeah.
That looked insane. That looked serious with upstairs, beautiful guitars everywhere.
The Guitar Sanctuary was probably like the best, most unique experience I've had in a guitar shop. Like that was
that's
why we went. I saw it online and I said, there's no way this place is going to look like this.
Yeah,
it was like better in person. That was one of those times where I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
The whole area outside where just all the other shops, they all look like that cobblestone kind of vibe. I don't know if that's the right term, but the architecture there was just beautiful.
And, it looked amazing.
It's hot as balls outside.
Far out.
It was so hot, man.
Yeah.
But it was unreal. Those guys are lovely.
Yes.
I still would love that PRS, but I did the conversion.
Well, you know, PRS, don't get me started on them.
because
one of the reasons I went to Anderton's is PRS have this guitar. No, I'll get it wrong. I think it's called an SC56 single cut. So, and again, the blurb has been, this is his Les Paul killer. Okay, with yet another version of pickups that are wound with, you know, tears of gypsies and all that sort of stuff put in it.
Yeah.
So I went down to the high-end room in Anderton's and they had one there because I think there were 500 worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, and I'd been hanging around this other place in London called the Gibson Garage in London,
Put some B-roll up if I've still got it.
Put some B-roll up, as in bloody hell. It's amazing. So my ears were tuned to the Gibson sound.
Yeah.
So I went in there and played this SC. And as with all PRS guitars, it just feels supremely engineered. Everything is ergonomic and it just sits beautifully and it's out in tune, out of the box and everything. So I played it for about half an hour and the sales guy in there just said, well, if you're here to compare it to a Les Paul, you're going to need a Les Paul. And of course, they have every kind of high-end Les Paul there.
Yeah.
So I got a Murphy Lab R9, which is like a super schmicked version of the R9 I already have.
Yeah.
And I literally played three notes and thought, there you go. That's it.
Yeah.
For me, the Gibson, you know, they go to tune, they're heavy, they're clanky, they're not ergonomic.
Yeah.
But they've got a sound. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what I go for, that attack and their bloom and the dynamics and all that sort of stuff.
So. It's also something just about the vibe of a guitar too, right? It can be engineered beautifully. And I like PRS guitars, but
yeah.
You might just prefer the feel or vibe of that classic kind of thing, you know?
Yeah,
and
look, I'd rather struggle with the feel but get the sound.
Yeah.
And even the guy... I probably shouldn't say that. I hope the engines don't lose their business, but the guy said, oh, yeah, it does sound better. But, you know, he and I probably have the similar sort of vintage, you know, we play dad blues.
Yeah.
But it was great. And they were such nice blokes. I guess at that end of the market, the guitars sell themselves. They don't have to stand over you and say, are you taking that today?
Yeah.
It was a really... Yeah, it was a great experience.
So how many of those did you get in the end?
I got a couple.
Yeah, good.
No, I didn't. And it was just great. And they had beautiful Music Man guitars.
Oh, yeah. They're great.
You into them?
Yeah, I've never really played one because I don't find them in
No.
Actually, I played two at Jerry's years ago, 10 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Lefty guitars. But I actually really liked them. One of my favorite guitars of our friend Brian is his Music Man.
Oh, yes.
Man, that thing rips.
Yeah,
it's got
it is.
Great, like, tremolo. And when we went to that place in Germany that had all the...
Yes, of course.
All those music...
Yeah,
that
yeah.
clip of you playing... Yeah. It was like Riviera called? Paradise yes. or something along those lines. It was... Oh, no, the other one. Anyway, whatever it was. It was a beautiful little...
It's a Stratty thing, yeah.
Yeah, and it sounded great. It's got the noise-canceling system in there without
it's
it
great.
Being, like, built into the pickups. Yeah, and
they work well. They just...
Yeah.
They just, unfortunately, for some reason, have a crappy resale value.
Oh, yeah. You can't get rid of them.
No, but they're
give
great.
You 50 bucks on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cost me $4,000. No, 75.
Yeah. Toss in some strings and you got a deal.
Yeah. But, and drive it over to my house.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, lots of high-end, you know, Fender custom shops that have just been... you know, dragged behind a car for miles and miles. And they're all beat to crap. But yeah, I think I've got over that kind of factor, especially with the Fender custom shop stuff. Because it's just a cynic in me. Because I can't believe that's a $10,000 guitar. It's just a Strat with a whole lot of cosmetic crap on it.
Yeah. But how's that different from the high end Gibson market?
Oh.
I'm just curious to see if you feel there's a difference.
Here comes a huge crashing double standard. I guess I just look at a Les Paul and see there's quite a lot of work that goes into them.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, sure, I still think you have to play 20 to find the one that you want. But just the solid body, set neck, all that sort of pitch stuff. But nah, I'm sure it's just a gaping, hypocritical double standard that I just see that, you know, that could be worth a bit more than something else. It's just a CNC cut body and a neck.
I definitely noticed the difference in whatever that $15,000 Gibson Les Paul I played at Sky. Yeah. We did a live jam recently.
Yes.
And like that was so good. I didn't look at what model it was beforehand. I'll put it up on screen over the top of this or whatever, but it played so great. And those pickups were phenomenal. But then I found out it was 15 grand on sale. I was like,
Well, that was me lurking in the comments section saying, buy it. You must buy it. It sounded so good. And you could just see straight away that you bonded with it. And the flow of ideas and all that. It's killer. You know,
I still feel that with the Fender Custom Shop guitars with Strats and Tallies to some extent.
Yeah.
There is something nice about the way they play, and they've definitely saved the best pickups for the high-end guitars. And it's, you know, it's pretty common knowledge. You can't almost buy those ones on their own anymore. They're just made for those guitars. I played that black yes. Tally years ago.
Yeah.
The thing was so good.
Yeah, it was.
I was talking about this on a live stream. It's funny how, like, with the Fender stuff, it's, the cheapest stuff is the lightest. And then yes. it goes into this really heavy sort of made in Mexico kind yep. of range. And then it gets progressively lighter until you're back at the light yeah. guitars on the custom shop range. How does that, how's that happen?
Are they just gaslighting us? I reckon they are. Because I'm old enough to remember when a guitar was heavy, oh, how's the sustain?
Ooh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it's just heavy. It's yeah. a brute and it kills you. So, yeah, look, I'm certainly over the old heavy guitars means better sustain, all that sort
yeah,
of crap.
Yeah, totally.
But, yeah, there is a part of me that says, oh, yeah, they'll send those heavy bodies down and to Mexico so people have this perception of, oh, I feel that lot of these, oh, it's worth it.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely something going on with that. It's yeah, just yeah. all across the board. Unless someone can let us know otherwise in the comments, I've never picked up a really light Made in Mexico standard series anything.
Yeah.
From Fender. It's always heavier, and I've traveled yes. with them and bought them overseas. Same with the classic vibes. They were like ridiculously heavy, those 50s tallies.
Really?
Yeah. The strap wasn't as bad, but the tally was just
right. Like, are we talking heavy like an artist tally heavy or?
Not quite as bad as that Jewel yeah. humbucker one.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad. Oh, yeah. That was brutal. But
yeah,
they've sorted that out now. Their new tallies are as light as like custom shop guitars.
Really?
Crazy. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy because, again, both you and I are on the minimalist kind
yeah.
of thing. And but, you know, you travel overseas to see what people are up to and what they're doing, what the shops are doing. And
Yeah. Oh, I love checking out gear. I spoke about this on even on my new Guitar Day video with the Epiphone that it was a bit hypocritical to say I'm downsizing my gear, but I bought a new guitar. But I am actually doing that, and there's something sort of liberating about not having a lot of stuff floating around you're not using. And I feel like almost for like the gear thing is fun, but it can also take away from just the enjoyment of playing, or at least that's how I'm feeling about it now. Maybe because I'm always testing things and reviewing things, but I feel like it was an easier time not being too concerned with anything. That's kind of part of the reason why I went for the Epiphone. Like, I could get something else, and I was like, I don't really need anything else. And at the end of the day, like, I've seen Chris Kane play Epiphones.
Yeah.
I've seen great guitarists use Squires, and it doesn't really... for me now, it's just about finding a guitar that plays and sounds great.
Yep.
And the rest is up to me, and I want to keep it as simple as I can with my setup, so I'm not always questioning things, and I'm very rigid with my pedal board. It's been the same for like freaking 7 years or eight years.
Unchanged.
But yeah, I feel like the whole gear thing, it's as fun as it is, there's a time where, or at least for me, where I sort of hit the wall with it, and I thought, I've just got to start working on playing more.
Yeah,
and I think really, like, I was bored of what I was playing. I was like, feeling uninspired musically and just too focused on stuff.
Yeah,
so, I got way more stuff than you see in my little room that I shoot
the videos.
Yeah, I've
seen it, folks. He's not lying.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of cupboards full of pedals and amps and stuff, and I just want to clear all of it out so I don't have to. Decluttering's good for the soul. That's the message.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Look, I mean, I think the 335... yeah, that's born of a voice that you're hearing in your head now and a direction that you want to go down. And it just, that's a great guitar to bring out that sort of nuance and it just thinking about, you know, your night choices and attack and dynamics. And I love that, which is why, you know, it's literally since we spoke last, I've not played one gig with an amp with a valve in it. There's no glassware that's been damaged at all. And I guess back then I was thinking, probably just going to be a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
You can have fun with all these sort of models and do that. But if you get something that works for you and is enables you to have this open channel of creativity without thinking, oh, should I just get down and just turn that knob or,
you
know, maybe I'll be a better player if I buy that pedal or that amp or whatever. Nah, if you stop thinking about it and just do it and get that lovely sort of feedback loop between you and your guitar and your amplifier, then that surely has to be what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's like inspiring. I mean, I used the Tonic stuff live at the jams a few times. I haven't actually done a gig with it, but it sounds better than a lot of amps.
Oh,
it's unbelievable, and it's so loud. You get great clean headroom,
yeah,
and you dial it in right.
That's right.
And your process has changed a little bit now, I believe, from where you were before bringing the laptop to the gig. And
No. Once you get it right, look, I did this big, big for us anyway. It's a big gig. It was about 500 people in the room. Nice. And it just ran the DI out of the Tony's cab into the PA, and it just so happens that our sound engineer is a guitarist, which is awesome.
Yeah, great.
He was just saying, that's amazing. That's unbelievable. Yeah. And because you use a Tonex cab like a monitor, it makes the stage volume cleaner.
Yeah, yeah.
So the singers aren't complaining of, I can't hear myself. Sorry, singers. But it was just amazing. So I think that was a really affirming real-world experience, because I was thinking to myself as I was driving into the gig, geez, what if it sucks? You know, I'm stuck. I've got no other options because I'm too lazy to bring a whole separate setup.
Yeah.
But, all through the gig, and I've seen, videos played back and thought, that's amazing. It just works.
Yeah.
And so I stopped thinking about it and just played. It's been an interesting year, I would have to say, overall, with just finding a sound that works, finding stuff that is pretty well straightforward for idiots like me, and just practicing and working on your playing.
Yeah, we're also going to shoot a video of Rick showcasing how he's got it set up, and if we've got time, maybe we'll compare it to a small valve amp in the room.
Totally, yeah, absolutely.
Or maybe do something separate like that.
We'll do a blind test. That'll be interesting. Pick it again.
With a room mic, because the close mic thing doesn't work so well on the Tonex cab. It's got two.
That's right. It's got the little horn and the 12-inch driver. So no, that would be good. Potentially embarrassing, but could be good.
Yeah, I think it, knowing what I know about how it sounded against some of the Blues Juniors in the room, it was, I think, much better.
Yeah.
In terms of just the throw of sound, the clean headroom is just unbelievable. Yeah. Those cabs are so loud.
Yeah, they are. It never got above about sort of 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock on the volume dial.
Yeah,
and again, because it's facing you, the feedback is you've got to sort of find some spot to turn so you don't get as much. You can't have every note taken off, but it's great. And again, I'm not thinking, does that sound like a transistor amp or a valve amp? It just sounds like what I need it to sound like. Serve the song, and give a tone that's pleasing and makes you want to play.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff has been good for so long, and it's like the best digital modeling amp that I think we've both tested, at least in my opinion anyway, was the old Mustang 3 version 2s.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when we did those blind tests back in the day at your place, it fooled you in the room.
You can't
hear the difference, and people always talk about feel and this, but it's more than that now. It's it feels great to play. It sounds good for you. It's convenient. You don't have to lug this big heavy amp around. It's I guess the argument is always, why wouldn't you just use a small tube amp? But you still got one of those anyway. So.
Yeah, I'll never be without one.
Yeah.
But, it's fit for purpose.
Yeah.
Is what I can see. And there's just so many touring pros because cartage is so expensive.
Yeah.
You have a whole separate setup in Europe for your touring and here, or you just... Yeah, you have this this digital thing which sounds great through a big PA and one of my favorite guitarists, a guy called Simon McBride, awesome player, and he's got a touring rig that's got a Quad Cortex, which is obviously the big granddaddy of them all.
Yeah,
but for a guy like him who's hardcore to be just using a digital rig for a lot of his gigs. Yeah, if it's good enough for him, gosh, it has to be good enough for us mere mortals.
Yeah. Yeah, you could argue that the tube amp will do this or that or the, but to record, how easy is it? You could just plug it in, get the same sound every time, get a consistent album or a live show.
Yeah.
I
think so. I think the unpredictability of sort of valve gear is a bit overrated, but you know, again, I'm sure there'll be a whole lot of audio files go, if you can't hear the difference, then, you know, stop wasting my time.
Yeah. I'm glad you stuck with it, man, because it's like,
yeah, for
you
sure.
You were pumped about it, you know, how long ago was it? 8 months ago or something?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was about March this year that I sort of started looking into it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I keep waiting for the bubble to burst. I mean, I guess the only thing that I think about in the back of my mind is, oh, if it goes down, but, you know, I've got the large Tonix, but also the little one.
Yeah.
And I always have the little one with me with three sounds loaded straight away.
Yeah.
But I've also, because I'm an anti-gear guy, I've bought some more gear. This thing called an air step.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, which is basically, it's a five-button foot switch thingy that gives you access to all the 20 presets on the little Tonix.
Yeah.
And it also gives you the capacity to turn effects on and off. And
oh, wow, yeah, okay.
Look, involves a fraction of tap dancing, but, you know, we're all frustrated tap dancers, aren't we, us guitarists? it's got a lithium-ion battery in it. So
cool.
It can power the little Tonix for 3 hours.
Oh, that's good.
It's brilliant. So yeah, you have to have, you know, power going everywhere.
Is that Bluetooth, is it, or is it just plug it in?
You plug it in, but it has this Bluetooth connectivity to an app, an iPhone app.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And you can edit the patches.
Cool.
So that's really great. So literally, well, I mean, everyone's got their phone with them. So I just, in my gear bag, there's a little Tonix pedal, mm-hmm. the Tonix one, and this air step, which is, you know, yay long. And I just have a charge. So if it does go down, I can just, you know, have that. So I guess that's my only thing sometimes. I think I've got all my eggs in one basket. And if that goes down, I'm stuffed. I might as well just, you know.
One of the things that kind of drives me crazy about YouTube, right, like anytime someone's promoting digital, they say, oh, it's more reliable than Valve. And, you know, if the tubes go bad or anything can break. Yes. It's electronics, right? You can spend $10,000 on a camera and have it not work properly, or $10,000 on an amp and not have it work properly, or whatever you want to spend on anything, right? Like things just go bad no matter what.
Yeah.
So they just work no matter what. And, yeah, I always think that's sort of like, people never think about like what happens if the foot controller part of it goes down or whatever, right? Yeah. Then you're sort of stuck.
Yeah.
But you've got the power section, so you know you could have a backup unit, like you said, and run it that way. But it's always good to have a backup unit no matter what you're using.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. You can you know, blow a fuse, all that sort of stuff, but.
Like stuff like that. It's so unpredictable. I've done gigs where, mate, I just flick the amp on, fuse is gone.
Yeah.
I have to go to the kitchen, thankfully, and if they've got one, and get some tin foil and pop it back in.
Have you done
that before.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like, I would have no sound otherwise. That's why I got onto those, like, Joyo American sound pedals back in the day.
Yes.
Those little things. They're like a great little amp backup. I know Brian still, I think, got one in his bag of backup goodies and cables and stuff. So.
Well, you just... It's just good. Yeah. It's good sort of gig practice just to have something in case it goes down.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I guess maybe the argument could be that some of this stuff isn't as repairable.
Oh, no.
I'm sure
if it goes down, you throw it away.
Yeah, you just get another one. Yeah. But
yeah.
It's been pretty good so far, like no issues.
Oh, no, no, zero issues. No, I've been really happy, and I've got a couple of gigs coming up in the next few weeks, sort of heavy rock sort of stuff.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm sure I told the joke last time that I thought I would be stabbed and punched up, and because I don't have a double Marshall stack.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think these days, if it sounds good, the pundits don't care.
No. People don't.
They probably don't care anyway. It's only us.
I think a lot of people who watch live shows and can tell if someone's great or if they're really not very good.
Yeah, yeah.
But the tone thing doesn't matter. If they're playing great, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
unless
true.
They're chopping your head off or, you know, with high end or whatever.
Exactly. But, well, you know, as John Sears said, that practice cures most tone problems.
Yeah.
It's been a good journey and it's showing no signs of abating, and I've stopped. You'll be happy to know I've stopped spending a small fortune on these packs of profiles. And I found I found three that work great, and I'll use them.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So you settled on the, was it the Dumble one you were saying?
Yeah. So the, it's a sort of a hybrid Dumble Marshall. Lots of Dumble front end and a Marshall back end. I don't know what it is. Yeah. But it just sounds good.
Yeah, great.
And it's dynamic, and so it's basically three versions of that. You know, lightly clipped and a bit more crunchy, and then a solo sound with all the 80s trouser flap built in.
Well, that's the way to do it. I mean, that's how you'd cascade your drive if you were using a pedal board into an amp, or, you know, if you're flicking channels, you dial it in that way. I think that's great.
Yeah, for sure.
You can play all the parts. I was saying to you this on the phone that because you know all the parts to all the songs,
people know
that you're playing the part. They don't.
Yes.
No, it's not a Marshall, like a whatever amp was the song that was, what am I trying to say? It's not the amp that the song was recorded with, but they know the part. So
that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing because I can have my sort of guitar volume on 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And often I can get all the sounds I need out of one or two patches because it's just dynamic, just like what we've been doing for 40 years.
Yeah. And the great thing with it is if you get bored of that, you can dial in something else and have three new ones.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's
for sure.
All right. So after taking a break from like not playing for weeks or maybe a month, if that ever happens for you, what's your process getting back into it? Because,
You know, it's going to hurt. It's just going to hurt because these things, there's no shortcut. I mean, you hear all these sort of things, soak them in, blah, 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 and then it toughens them up. But there's no shortcut to getting back and just playing, and it makes you feel like when you first began.
Yeah.
And I sort of get, I just think, right, there's no shortcut. I'm just going to push down really hard until it really hurts. And just keep going. And it probably takes, about 4 or 5 days, and then they really start to harden up again.
Yeah, that's sounds about right.
Yeah. But nothing works. The muscle memory is dodgy. And it's just clanky, and then you start looking like, you know, you're some newbie, like, where's that go again? And it's just tricky, but you've just got to be at it. So I just usually put on some backing tracks because your timing goes too.
Oh, tell me about
The phrasing and everything is just like, shit, you just miss it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, some drummers when they come out of a fill and it's like, already on. Where's the one, mate? Gosh, we're dissing everyone today. But, just getting the timing back and listening and being a bit patient. And it's surprising. It does come back.
Yeah.
But I even find after a week of not playing, it's a bit depressing, isn't it? I mean, do you find that when you don't go to the gym for a while and you get back, it's like, gosh.
Oh, 100%.
Everything, you know?
Yeah. The gym's worse because you're, like, in pain everywhere.
Yes.
If you haven't trained for a while, it's brutal. Screaming. But I had the last couple of weeks off from the end of last year to the 15th almost of, not the 15th, but just before the 13th of Jan. So I had almost 3 to 4 weeks off not playing at all. I didn't touch a guitar. Ooh. And when I know I'm playing well, I'm recording a lot, I'm doing the backing tracks, that helps my timing and all these things, and I'm always touching the guitar. And I said to Rihanna, man, my fingers are killing me after playing for 15 minutes, not even 10 minutes, my fingers were sore.
Yeah.
The timing was atrocious. The everything from, I can't play fast, but I always think if I'm flowing well, it should sound good.
Yeah.
Everything went, the flow went, just simple things that I was working on before I left, I couldn't remember how to play them. Hang on a sec. So I put on some backing tracks. I put on some old blues albums that I love.
Yep.
And I tried to play as minimal as I could. I forced myself just to play, get my bends back, get, 15 minutes one day, 20 minutes the next day, 25, 30 minutes the next day. And I'm on a handful of days where I'm practicing in the mornings now. And it's come back, but it's not all the way there.
Nah.
But I also didn't play enough rhythm guitar. I worked that out.
Yeah,
your rhythm guitar is good when your rhythm guitar is good, your lead guitar is much better.
Yeah, yeah, it's about the pocket, isn't it? Yeah, for sure. And I'm sort of listening to the note that I finish a phrase on.
Yeah,
because ideally, I would say, it's nice for that note to be in the key of the chord that's under it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise it just sounds a bit sort of sour.
Yeah.
And if you just are playing sort of from rote, it's just a random thing whether it is or not. It's like falling down the stairs. So, just being a bit more mindful. So sometimes having a break's a good thing because it breaks you out of those repetitive habits.
Perfect.
You know, where you're doing it. But, being a bit more mindful. No, but it hurts. It hurts and it's awful. And even when you're bending, you can feel your fingers that are a bit weak, so they start shaking.
Yeah.
And that sort of vibrato that's not good, it's that, sound.
Yeah,
you hear it blues jams.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. No, you're right. Everyone plays like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those bends that don't really have a destination.
No, you sort of push around. But it's okay. But it sounds like you definitely need a guitar in Perth. You must have a guitar.
Yeah, it's probably worth doing next time. Maybe I'll find one over there or something on the secondhand market or something.
Yeah, I know guys over there.
Oh, man. They got some nice stuff to rock in.
Haven't they?
Far out. What a shop.
Yeah.
I actually wanted some time off this trip. Like, I've just been going for a while, and I thought, the start of the year, just take a few weeks and don't do anything. And it was great. But I lost my chops. I lost my calluses.
Yeah.
But I worked on my tan a little bit, which was nice. It's nearly washed off now. But, I think having a break, like you said, is good for your approach.
Yeah.
It made me think a little bit more. Because I couldn't play as smoothly or as fast as I would normally be able to do.
Yeah.
I was thinking more about landing notes, like you said, notes or playing or referencing notes in the chord changes of blues, at least. Anyway, that's kind of what I'm thinking about now. But
it
makes a big difference to like that, thinking about that, taking your time and being okay with being bad. A lot of people will go, oh, screw it. This was I'm a persistent kind of guy with certain things, and like yesterday I was recording the jam track to the 3-3-5.
Yeah.
The rhythm part, I usually get them in about two goes.
Yeah.
Usually. And I wrote this new thing. It was like based on a Freddie King thing.
Nice.
And I kind of got it. I was like, that's good enough for where I'm at right now. Don't try to get it perfect. And then I tried doing the solo and it took me 20 goes. And it's still not great, but it's a different approach because of my dexterity not being quite right.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's some all right stuff in there because it's a bit more simple.
Definitely.
But you got to push through it too. I think, like, if you can go, okay, this might suck, but I'm just going to try my best until I start to feel something.
Yeah.
And you feel these, like, ideas blasting back into your mind. It's weird how it happens.
Getting to the flow state takes a good while.
Yeah.
You know, but... Yeah, you just got to persist, and you'll find that the connections, they're like synapses in your brain. They find each other, and then when they do, it's like, I'm back.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps with some other sort of, new thoughts and ideas.
Yeah.
Because you've been thinking about it as opposed to just playing them, so.
It's funny, when I take a break from guitar, I don't even think about the fact that I can do any, well, up to my level of playing, I don't even think about anything to do with it unless I've got one in my hand. I don't know if you're the same way. Like I think about like playing guitar, but I don't think about what I know on guitar until a guitar's in my hand. So that break for me was like, it's like being in a coma almost when it came to my musicality. I didn't have a guitar to pick up and noodle around on. I didn't keep any of the ideas flowing or anything, and it's weird. I just picked it up. I went, I could play guitar, and then I was trying. I was like, I'm gonna be bad for a while now.
Yeah,
but it's funny. I don't know if you run ideas in your head when you're not playing too much, but
it's funny because obviously you and I have done a few long haul flights since we last chatted, and I can't watch a movie on a plane.
Yeah,
I doze off, or I always say it's because the oxygen level in a plane is a bit lower than Earth. So, I don't know, it's probably horseshit. But so I listen to music and I'll go through all the back catalogues of all the music on the plane, and there's, stacks of them. But, I think I'm always, music will always be something that I love, and I just feel like it sort of, it feeds you in the back of your head.
Yeah, yeah.
That subconscious and melodic ideas and whatnot. So
yeah, cool.
I usually end up getting off a plane thinking, yeah, I've got to go to a guitar shop, which is, yeah, caused a few issues. But, yeah, so, yeah, I guess, yeah, I do think about it. And I just, you know, even if I listen to the whole Beatles back catalogue, I just can't help but marvel at the genius of and the relative sort of simplicity of their songwriting that just gets in your head. And,
yeah. I should have prefaced that by saying if I'm not listening to music.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
That was kind of where I was going with that. But, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like if I was to, like B.B. King and Eric Clapton album came on, that Riding with the King one.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, I've jammed to that so many times, like Days of Old and all that. There's some of my, like, getting loose kind of songs when I haven't been practicing for a while. And it's like then I start thinking, oh yeah, I know those licks or riffs or whatever.
Yes,
But unless I'm listening to stuff, I must be able to sort of detach from it in a way that's kind of weird. I wondered if everyone was sort of thinking about it like that, because when I don't have a guitar in my hand or I'm not getting ready to record or I'm not listening to stuff, it's like it's not there for me. Yeah. I have to always keep listening to the if I want to. When I'm trying to improve, I'm listening to the things that inspire me, and then it's always around.
Yeah.
But when I distance myself from all of that, it's just gone. It's weird. And then I can play guitar kind of.
Yeah.
And you get back to it. It's weird.
It is.
It's like a whole different part of my brain.
Yeah. That's the beauty of music, though. It's just always there, and you drill down on it. Because some of the gigs I do are these sort of corporate things, and you're going to play lots of sort of old classic songs, blah blah blah, and when I get back to the blues, it's like this cleansing feeling. And it's authentic and it's never played the same way twice.
Yeah,
and I love that. I know it's a, you know, it's a simple sort of form, but it just hits you where you need it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
It's simple until it isn't. As well, there's that. Mm. Like people go, oh, blues is easy. It's like, well, listen to some of the other guys and then try and play that. And I bet you like 99% of people can't do half of what Chris Kane does or Guy King or any of these dudes.
Exactly.
Or,
you
know, any of the like Josh Smith and
they're
like animals on guitar, man.
Yeah.
It's like unbelievable. It's a completely different approach. It's got everything in there.
Yeah, for sure.
You're right, though. It's sort of like liberating because you're not just playing the part that someone else wrote. You're playing your own kind of.
Yeah, that's right. You're interpreting it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I always, and people think you're being a smart ass, but you say simple doesn't mean easy. You know?
Yeah.
Simple could just be just that perfect note that is needed. And why would you do 10 when one, and that's what BB does, Albert, Freddie, all these dudes. There's no kind of flash, it just feels, you know, emotional and visceral, and that's where the blues phase comes from, isn't it?
Oh, that totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I was listening to so much Albert Collins before I went away, and man, that dude's pocket for ripping those riffs is unmatched, I reckon. It's so good. His attack's great. It's got like the face, you know, he's got the crazy hair.
Isn't he?
He's awesome, man. Like, so many great live shows for.
Yeah.
You know, all these dudes online now, it's just amazing what you can find. And
definitely.
Pick little pieces out of everything and try to make it work. But
yeah, for sure. Look, it's just, it's authentic. And like if you distill down the notes, there's probably six notes that he just uses all the time.
Yeah.
But it's his attack and the way he kind of, the dynamic, and it's a gift. And that's why, you know, we're on a journey that will never end.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's just great.
There's a lot of people who I know personally as well as through the YouTube channel who have gone from being gamers, you know, you finish a game or whatever, you get to a point sort of done.
Yeah.
Who moved to guitar and they realized, oh yeah, this, you could do this for as long as you wanted.
That's
right. As long as you keep pushing yourself, you know, or trying, and as long as you're moving in a direction that makes you feel happy, it's easy to learn and to continue.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's unlike a game where, as you say, there's a sort of beginning, a middle, and an end. Well, this is forever. I can sweat in my practice room because it's alive in you, isn't it?
And
when you can make a sound that is pleasing, it's Yeah, it's just great.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mm. Well, there we go. We finished about talking about guitar in like a way that isn't just about gear. I like it. That's a good, it's a good way to end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Right, thank you, Rick. Welcome back.
No worries, mate. It's I'll talk guitars to anyone, anywhere, until you fall asleep.
Sounds good. We're going to have some lunch, and then we'll get in the other room and make some noise.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks. See ya. Catch you soon.